Premanandi. Shilupad Kija. Om Jnana Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Taksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasade Gaur Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So when I was told that somehow I organized my initial program, and someone told me it was Easter, I thought they were making an April Fool's joke. Because why would I make a program on Easter, where many people who have families couldn't come? And when we were doing the kirtan, I thought of one verse of the Shikshastakam, where, well, in the beginning it says, Vidyu Vadu Jivanam. When you chant the holy name, it's the life of all knowledge. And I kind of thought of that. When you focus on the Supreme Lord in any of his manifestations, especially his holy name, you get realization. You get the highest knowledge by actually experiencing it. And I also thought how nice it is to chant in New York, because you have to chant with humility and dependence, and the city somehow brings that out in people, or it can. Okay, now I'm going to ask one question to begin. And if you're in a seminar where I ask this question and you already know the answer I'm going to give, don't give the answer like you're a genius. Just humbly admit that I gave it before. So, if it's a situation, I don't know what it, running out of a burning house, being on a deserted island, no electricity, nothing like this, you can't bring an iPad or a Kindle or anything. If there was one book that you would take, what book would it be and why? Anybody like to guess? Anybody like to guess?
I've heard you say this before. So
what? Yeah, don't. That would be pride. Okay. Okay, I'll give the answer. I'll tell you the book Prabhupada would take. Prabhupada would take the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the life and teaching of Sri Chaitanya. And why do I say that? Because that's what he did. When he came on the Jaladuta, he came on one steamship and he came to America. He had very limited things. Of course, he took the Bhagavatams to sell, but the book he took for himself was the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And the reason why he took that book is it's the biography and life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya. And it was written right after Lord Chaitanya. So it has everything in the book. It has all the poetry of the famous poets. It has all the Gita is mentioned in there. It has the Bhagavatam. So it has everything in that book. So it's a very, very significant book. Now, in a book, in any type of writing, generally the first thing that is said and the last thing that is said is very, very important. This is what they call hermeneutics. When you analyze any type of book and you try to find a theme, there's different characteristics that you look for. And one thing that's very important is what is said first, and especially what is said last. For example, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first instruction is Harinam Anukirtanam. You should do kirtan. And the last verse is you should do kirtan. So you can understand there's so many subjects that are discussed, but this one is very important. So what's the last chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita? Anybody know? Of this whole book. It's the culmination of Sri Chaitanya's teachings, and he's the one who's given these teachings. We're followers of him. He's the one that gave the kirtan movement. The last chapter is called the Sikshastakam prayers. So we understand that in our tradition, that is very significant. And what are the Sikshastakam prayers? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wrote only 8 verses. And then it's described, basically, this is the end of his life. At the end of his life, he's with his associates and he's appreciating his mission. Everyone has a mission. When God comes, he has a mission. And he had a mission. And what was his mission? God incarnates as Sri Chaitanya because he wants to experience the love of his topmost devotee. It's a very interesting ontology, study of a study of God, that for God to be complete, he has to be the supreme enjoyer. And the supreme enjoyment is love. And love is experience. Love is an energy. And love is experience. The same energy is experienced from two sides. One, there's an object of love, the beloved, and there's a subject of love, the lover. Like a mother has a child, the child is the object of love, or the beloved, and the mother is the subject of love, or the lover. And they're enjoying a particular energy, they're enjoying the same energy. So God is the supreme enjoyer, rasa vaisaha, it says in the Upanishad, what he's enjoying is love at his height. But God, to be complete, must always also experience that love from the perspective of his devotee. God is the object of love. He has his flute, threefold bending form, the devotees are doing kirtan, and he's enjoying love. It's an energy. Actually, the essence of his Ladini Shakti, of God's pleasure potency, is prema, or love. So God is enjoying love. But to enjoy that love fully, he must also take the position of his own devotee. Just like to appreciate motherly love fully, you can be a child and have a mother, but you also have to be a mother and have a child. To fully experience that type of love, you have to experience it from both ends of the spectrum. So for that reason, God comes, and that's the story of Chaitanya. It's the story of God becoming his own devotee. And I sometimes, when I give a class like this, I make a joke, God has a problem. It's the same problem we have. And what's God's problem? He's not a devotee. So God has to become his own devotee. And therefore, it's considered what's called Acharya Leela. It's the story of God teaching us how to become a devotee, how to get that love, which is called rasa. Rasa is love at its height when it's consuming. So now in this last chapter, we go, I say if we can take a, like we can make a Google map that can not only focus on a place, but it can go in time. So this Google map goes to Puri. And it, I'd like to welcome Satyaraj Prabhu. I got to welcome you, come on. Most of you know Satyaraj, but Satyaraj Prabhu, Steve Rosen, he's the editor of the Journal of Vaishnav Studies. That's the premier journal, academic journal, for the study of Vaishnavism. And his most recent book happens to be, by a major publisher, is on Lord Chaitanya. What's the title of the book? And what's the publisher? Yeah, so this is a major publisher. So in the academy, in the universities now, when professors study Eastern religion and they study Chaitanya or that Bengali Vaishnavism, they'll be studying that. And just before I left, I was with him in the Bhakti Center. And we're very good friends, and good friends can get on other friends' case. So he gave me a copy of the book, and he was a little bit on my case that you're doing the Shikshastakam, and one of the main chapters of it, you're doing the Shikshastakam, and that's one of the main chapters in my book. And I gave you the book, and you haven't even read it yet. And then I said, oh, come on. And then I said, okay, let me look at the book. And I opened the book. What chapter is it? I write right to the Shikshastaka prayers. So now he's coming to see if, without reading the book, I can do something. So the Google map goes back in time, and this is the end of Chaitanya's life, and he's in ecstasy. And he's in the highest ecstasy that one can achieve, called Mahabhav. It's when love is to the height. And what he wanted to experience is actually, not only, because he's God, he not only wanted to experience the love of his devotee, he wanted to experience the love of his topmost devotee. And he not only wanted to experience the love of his topmost devotee, he wanted to experience the love of his topmost devotee at the height of her love. So now he's experiencing it, and all these, because love is an emotion, but it can be a spiritual emotion. Love of God is a, he's overwhelmed. He's overwhelmed with all kinds of emotions are coming. And he's with his confidential associates. He has people that are very close to him. And confidential means you have something in your heart. When you bring it out, you have to bring it out with people who have trust, because they don't have the frame of reference to understand something deep in your heart. You can all think you have something confidential in your heart, good or bad. Okay, now, just everybody write it down and share it with everyone else. No, you won't. For he was sharing what's really confidential, which people didn't understand, that he wanted to have this love and experience this love. So he had two people that are really close and they're with him. And he begins to reflect on his mission. And his mission was twofold. It was to taste this love himself and give this love to others. And he's reflecting on his mission. And he begins to share it with his associates. And they begin, and one way you share something is all the sentiments and ideas in the bhakti tradition are expressed in poetry or prayers or songs. And they embody bhakti. You can't just, to really express bhakti, you have to make people feel it. You can explain it intellectually, but they have to feel it. And the way they can feel it is that there are great saints that have felt this mood, and they've expressed it. They've encapsulated that mood in perfect poetry so that if anybody hears it who has the inclination and is relatively in that, you know, has that objective, they can also feel it. So they're chanting different verses, and sometimes one mood would come into their hearts. And I know from Vrindavan, from being with people who are sadhakas or practitioners, one mood may be in your heart, and you may go the whole night with it. Just relishing, just one of the flavors of bhakti. So when he does this, he begins to reflect, and he reflects on his mission, and he begins to chant verses about the holy name of Krishna. Because he realizes this is how he's achieved this love, and this is how he's given this love. And where before he had basically at different times spoke these verses, now he puts them together in the mood of relishing what he's tasted and what he's distributed. He's relishing it with, just like when one type of bhakti is called guru bhakti. So when the spiritual master, he's disappeared, he's passed away, on his disappearance day, we meet. And I'm in a place called Govardhan, and I meet with about 15 really dear God brothers. And we just share those sentiments. We relish it. And also relish the songs that embody that sentiment. Yeya nilo prema dana karuna prachu. It's the mood of separation, etc. And then in this mood of reflecting back on what he's achieved, the love that's in his heart, and how many people have been touched by giving the holy name of Krishna, he begins to chant, he begins to recite and explain the eight prayers, the only eight verses that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can put, which is very unusual, because generally an acharya, a great teacher, the main thing he does is write books. Why? Because people are suffering due to ignorance or darkness, and books give knowledge or light. When Prabhupada came to the West, he came with books that he translated. Every acharya translates books. Lord Chaitanya only gave eight verses. Satyaraj Prabhu, why do you think that was so?
Well, he wanted to give his six Goswamis an opportunity to do that service.
He empowered other people to do that service. He had followers to do that service. I think also his life was very short, and he didn't have this mood, because the understanding is very interesting. You want bhakti. Bhakti is not in the heart of God. It's in the heart of his devotees. The devotees have love of Godhead. See, so when God wanted to get love of Godhead, first he had to find his guru. So that was halfway through his life. He only lived 48 years. And then when he became overwhelmed with this love, and then soon after it, he got the calling. And this is not for everyone. And even himself, he apologized to his mother lately that maybe he was crazy. But he left home to share it with the world. And then he began to travel and share. And then he settled in this place, Puri, for the last 18 years of his life to practice. He wasn't sitting down and writing. As soon as he traveled, and he was a sannyasi, he was a monk, he was traveling. How can you write when you're traveling? And then he sat down for what's called Nirjan Bhajan, without any people, basically, just focusing. But somehow or other, There were 8 verses that summarized his whole mission in 8 verses. And I felt this class is really going to be a challenge. I'll tell you why it was a challenge. Because I spoke on this last chapter, the Sikshastika prayers, for 1 month in Vrindavan. Then I went to Mayapur, and I spoke for 2 weeks. And then I went to Puri. And when I went to Puri, I spoke, Jagannath Puri, I spoke for 1 week. Now I have 2 days. So there was a famous author, Pasquale, not Julie. Famous author said, "I'm sorry my letter was so long, but I didn't have time to write it." So it means when you get something condensed, succinct, it has to be a lot of thought to it. So I'm going to try to cover the first 4 verses today, and I'm also famous for long introductions. So that's also kind of a challenge. But this is going to be my strategy too. First, because what is Lord Chaitanya giving? His mission is to give bhakti, devotion. Not only bhakti, but to give prema bhakti, spontaneous love, forceful love, intimate love. So that was his mission. So what I'd like to do first is explain what is bhakti and how the Sikshastakam prayers explain how Lord Chaitanya gave bhakti. Because obviously I can't go into detail in every verse. So I have to start from the essence and then work down. Like, when I was young, I had a hobby of doing sculpture, you know. So you have to start, you know, you don't start with the details. You first break it off generally and get more. So that's what I like to do. And I think that's the most interesting thing, the essence. Because if you understand the essence, you can understand everything else. Because the nature of a theme, what a theme means is the one idea which everything else is connected to. Every book has a theme. One statement that everything else in the book is connected to. So first, I want to explain bhakti, and then how Lord Chaitanya gave bhakti, and how he expressed bhakti through the Sikshastakam. And I think there's some really core principles that will also be very, very practical to our own spiritual life, no matter what level we're on. If you're on the beginning level with like me, or in advanced stages, no. Like Julie. So I always thought it was like, how do you explain bhakti? In a very, very simple way it is. And then 2 things came that helped me explain bhakti. One was a commentary on a particular verse that I was studying. It struck me. And then was something which exemplified it in life. And I think through that, I think I can explain what bhakti is, how you get bhakti, and how the Sikshastakam prayers exemplify that. 8 verses. So the first thing is I don't know what it was in reference to, but it described that just as the sun has heat and light, emanates heat and light, God emanates transcendental pleasure. So that was the first principle, that really is what bhakti is. Bhakti is the focus. That's what worship is. It's the focus on God and feeling God, feeling the relationship with God. Now, this was exemplified and really came to light. And I think this analogy will really help to explain it. Is several of you people with me in Vrindavan, Satyaraj was just there, and we went to that garden. And then we went to the gardens of Vrindavan, and we sat down. Sylvia was also there, Anne-Marie, Amber, Trumpuk, you weren't there yet with me. Other people, Bryn, Janine, different people were there. Julie was there. Spring was there.
What? Together and I closed my eyes. I was right back in the fields.
Okay.
There with you. I just went straight there.
It's the best place. So we went, and there's a beautiful sadhu there. Remember him? Sridhar, such a beautiful sadhu. Oh, yeah, you were there too. Yes, I remember Veer Bhajaram's group too. And I was sitting there, and then his grandson came and whispered something in his ear, and he ran away. And I said, what's going on? You know, usually he's there hosting us. And then I followed him. And when I followed him, a calf was being born. And I've never seen that before. I mean, I haven't seen one cow in all of New York. And the calf was being born, and it was an amazing thing for me to see. First of all, the calf was huge. I couldn't believe how big it was. And then it was spread eagle, you know, it means all its legs were out. And then it was going like this against the ground, and then it came up. And then as it came up, it went for the mother to get the mother's milk. And then the calf, the cow, started intensely licking its calf with so much affection. I was watching this. And then I said, yes, this is it. This explains what makes the world go round. This explains what the essence of the world is on the highest platform. That beings that have relationship have an energy between them that's called love. I saw that energy. It wasn't like something that the calf studied or the cow studied. It was an energy that went between them so intensely. And I thought, yes, this is the essence of the world. This is what bhakti is. Just as the calf has a relationship with the cow, we're part of God and we have a relationship with God. And that's what bhakti is when there's a focus that that energy comes of love and you feel it. And that's what the practice of bhakti is, and that's how you advance in bhakti. When you focus on a manifestation of God. And that explained. Then the question came, okay, why are we not feeling it? Why are we not feeling it if that relationship is so natural? Then I thought, yes, just like the sun, it's so much heat and light, it's so powerful, but if a cloud covers your eyes, then you don't feel that. You don't get the sun, you don't get the heat. It just takes a little cloud or, you know, a big hat. and it covers it and you don't feel it. So I say in the same way, that's what happens. Somehow or other, we're covered by a cloud of ignorance that doesn't allow us to experience that energy. And perception, and this is just such an important point, perception, to perceive something, is not just the senses. It's your attitude. And it's the focus of your consciousness. And this is also studied psychologically. Different people have different opinions of the same thing. There's something there. Different people experience it as good. Different people experience it as bad. It may be very good. But why don't you experience that? And then if you add into the factor that what you're trying to experience is a person, God is personal. And you can never experience a person unless a person gives themselves to you. You may see a person, you may touch a person, you may live with a person, but if you don't love the person and the person doesn't love you, you will never really see the person. How much of a person is just the external? And how many times have we seen someone and made opinions about them and got it all wrong, and then found out later that this is a very wonderful, loving person. So somehow we're covered by an ignorance of what's called ego or false ego. We want to be the center. We want to have a sense of superiority. And therefore, we can't see who is the center. We can't feel God. So what is spiritual life? Spiritual life begins with, if you look at that, a cloud of ignorance, spiritual life first begins with humility. Some sense that there's something higher than what I want. There's some authority that's higher than what I want. There's something that's true. There's something that's right. Some type of humility. And that kind of humility opens up a cloud in ignorance that allows you to kind of feel that. And then there's the practice of bhakti. Once some preliminary humility is there, and you can see if it's not there, people can't experience. Sometimes in Union Square, they have the Parinam party sitting down. So they do kirtan. So sometimes I go and I watch people go by. And if someone, you know, there's some people in New York, they just think, and everywhere, they're God's gift to the world. And they just walk with so much pride. And here these, you know, and sometimes it's very beautiful singing. I mean, sometimes it's not the best. Sometimes it's the best. Sometimes wonderful singers. And they don't hear anything. They don't feel anything. Why? It's not that the music is not in the ears. They don't have humility. They don't have a conception that there may be something higher than their own desires. There may be some truth. So this is actually how bhakti works. So what Lord Chaitanya says, and what he's going to say is that this is the practice of bhakti. Bhakti means you have to focus on God. The best way to focus on God is his name. That manifestation of God. There's the vacha and there's the vachika. Vacha means there's an object, and vachika means there's an expression of the object. The Yoga Sutras explains this very clearly, that in terms of mantra, mantra means God in sound, there's no difference between the vacha and the vachika. There's no difference in the expression of God and the expression of God, and that's the mantra. So what Lord Chaitanya is teaching us is Nam Nam Akari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shaktis. This name, it comes in many, many ways. Nija Sarva Shakti, it has all potencies. That's another term for God. God means what? Nija Sarva Shaktis. All potencies. So God has all potencies. It's in the name. And the process of experiencing the name is opening your heart with faith and conviction towards it. And the more you do, the more you feel that. And what is shraddha or faith? It's not I believe or I don't believe. It's your conviction of what actually gives you sublimity and happiness. So you develop this faith by the experience. That's why sometimes at the beginning, people have a tremendous spiritual experience at the beginning, because they're very innocent. A lot of times you see someone coming up from the subway, has been beaten down, you know, and his heart is just open. A person is looking for something or receptive. They don't have that faith in their objective in life, that I'm going to be rich, I'm going to be famous, I'm going to be happy. And then they come up and their heart is, and it hits them. And that becomes their faith, their experience. This is sublime. This is above something that is sensuous. This is above. The two pleasures are what? The feeling of superiority, right? That's one type of pleasure. And the other type of pleasure is some sensual experience. And the third type of pleasure is transcendental experience. The pleasure that is not for me. The pleasure is connecting myself something higher than me in love and experiencing that. So they experience. So in Lord Chaitanya, this is his mission. And he describes it's Nam Kirtan, it's that focus on Nam Kirtan. And the more you focus on it, and the more your heart is open to it, the greater you will feel it. And then another factor happens. Because what bhakti is, now remember, it's this experience of the divine, and it has to be given to you. So it reciprocates with love. Kali Kadamba, good to see you. Okay, good. Nice. Okay, good. A little bit late with your mother, but that's okay. I know it's your fault. She would be here on time for sure.
She was ready.
What?
She was ready.
Okay. Okay, we'll get them some seats. So before we go through the verses, so this is how it works. Chanting or kirtan, the syllables are God. That's what it says. But the experience of that name, the experience of that person, is going to be dependent on God giving himself to you. And that's what bhakti is. There's one verse in Bhagavad Gita. Kaylee, is anybody? Oh, Amber's sitting there. Kaylee, sit here in front. Okay, sorry, looks great.
Thank you.
Okay. Nice to see when someone young in New York City. I don't want to embarrass you. How old are you now?
Almost 15.
She'll be 15. She's taken such an interest in philosophy. Okay, now that I embarrass you, I'll leave you alone. Okay? Okay, thank you, but I'm glad you're here. Tesham satyuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tva. One who worships me with faith and devotion, I give themselves to you. So you're chanting the name. This is the secret. We chant the name, or someone chants the name. It's Krishna. But how much is Krishna revealed? He's revealed according to your love. Therefore, we say there's different levels of chanting, and one level of chanting is called Shudanam. When someone really has love, and when they chant, what happens? Then those Krishna is there in the name, everyone is hearing it. But what happens is when someone chants with love, then Krishna reveals himself. That's why when you have a kirtan of someone who is very, very devotional, it may be the same syllables, it may be the same melody, the same talent, but one who has bhakti or devotion, it's a whole other experience. Why? Because Krishna is more revealed. That's why, especially in the Hare Krishna movement, what Prabhupada taught is he taught what's called Prem Kirtan. Prem Kirtan, it's not entertainment. You do it out of love. And some of the best kirtaniers, they don't even try to look at the audience. It's deep. And what kirtan is, and this definition was given by our friend Satya Hari, who signed up for the class, is not here. And he wrote in the Vaishnav Journal that article on kirtan. It was brilliant. He wrote, kirtan is when the bhava in the heart, the devotion in the heart, is expressed through the discipline of music. So without bhava, it's not kirtan. You can sing, and it won't have that effect on people's hearts. So when someone has love, then Krishna manifests himself fully. And then their love is manifest in sound. And that's what the Shikshastam is going to explain too, because what one great saint explained is that these verses also indicate different levels of devotion. So as one advances and has deeper humility, because humility is the foundation of love, it says like this, it's described really nice in one commentary. This is such an important point. It says, hunger and food reduce each other. Right? If you have more food, you have less hunger. And if you have more hunger, it means you have less food. But it says, with humility and prema, or love, they increase each other. So when you have more prema, you have more love, you have more humility. To the extent you don't even think you have it. Why do you think that would be? When you have more prema, or you have more love, then you have more humility. It seems that when you have more prema, then what should happen? I'm the topmost devotee. Can't deny it. I have prema. I'm experiencing that deep love in my heart. I see it. I understand the stages of devotion. I'm overwhelmed in ecstasy. I've got it. Why shouldn't that be the case?
Because the ego is out of the way.
What?
The ego is completely out of the way.
The ego's got in the way. But why should it make one humble? Why should prema make one humble? It seems that when you advance, why should you feel I don't have it? You got it. You got more of it, and more of it, and more of it, and more of it.
Is it because it's more about the other?
Okay, love is more about the love. Well, think about real love and what real love means. Right? Real love means what? You step out of the center, you put someone else in the center, and the more love you have, the more you value that person. The more you value that person. And it makes you humble. Because you're serving. You willingly want to put yourself, that this is so, if you really love someone, and have real love, then wow. And more love, wow. Wow. It's not like I'm greater, I'm greater, I'm greater. And what happens is with the divine, premanjana charita bhakti, it reveals, because we're covered from reality by our attitude. So when we actually have love of Krishna, then Krishna manifests himself. And think what that means when you actually see God. And what God means. If you can actually, we don't see God. What we see is we see ourselves in the center, and we see everyone else around us. What is it if you actually can see God? And then see yourself. We're part of God. God is everything. God is Ishvara. Vara means the circle, Ish means the center. It's a thing which everything else is connected to. What would happen? You would see God everywhere. The first, in the Bhagavatam, the first step in God realization says the universal form. Everything in nature you see in relationship to God. When I went to the Himalayas, and I was up in the Himalayas, and you know, my image of the Himalayas would be like a tall mountain, but it was like range after range after range. I felt very small. But it was blissful. Because happiness is love. And love doesn't mean your greatness. In fact, that concept, you actually have, think of a child in a mother's arms. It's a good analogy of what humility is. A child in a mother's arms. The child has a relationship. What? Mother is the maintainer. So the child feels love and is so happy in that position. And they don't have low self-esteem. They don't feel very significant. The mother is everything. I'm dependent. I can't eat by myself. I can't go to the bathroom myself. I can't sleep by myself. That should really destroy someone's self-esteem. A child when they're born. But what does the child feel? What does the child feel? The child feels love. So they feel worth. So humility, you feel great worth. You feel great worth for what you are. And you're happy with what you are. Because what you're defined by more than anything else is relationship. And any relationship, if you want it to be successful, and you have the proper object of love, then you don't want to be dominant. You want to serve. And you want to feel this. Great, you know, when people have that, they feel so humble. One time, one of Prabhupada's disciples said to Prabhupada, "You must be higher than a Paramahamsa." Paramahamsa is the highest person. And Prabhupada said, "No, I am lower than you. I am the lowest of all creatures. I am simply fixed on the service to my spirit." It's a legitimate feeling. The child's love, it's overwhelming. You want to stay in that position where love flows. And the more you have that, the more the name that you chant is pleasurable to the object of your love. I always go, my friend told me this, you know, when you go in the market in Vrindavan, there's one shopkeeper with a high voice, and he goes, "Hari Bol Prabhu." And what do you hear? You hear the holy name, or you hear someone saying, "I want your money." So this is what kirtan means. You chant it at different levels of faith. And the more you're humble, which means you relish service, and you have that feeling of love, the more that's imbued within your chanting. Now, because I don't have so much time, and I gave a big introduction, now we'll go over the Shashastakam prayers, okay? But first, what we'll do, and we'll show how this actually, before that, I'm going to explain, just show you how it works. And then we're going to chant the Shashastakam prayers, and then we'll give an overview of them. So, Lord Chaitanya chants the first verse. And then what does he say after the first verse? Lamentation and humility awoke within Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he began reciting another verse. Right? And then he chants that verse. And then he says, "Hear for me the symptoms how one should chant to easily awaken love of Godhead." Then he chants another verse. And what does he say? It says, as Lord Chaitanya spoke, his humility increased. And then he chants another verse in what it says. In great humility, ati dainya, extreme humility. So humility is the force of love and bhakti. And the thing about humility that's interesting, it's a feeling. But you can also act humble by developing a mood of service. And if you act humble, you're more likely to be humble. If you just think humble but don't act humble, you won't be humble. Okay, so what we'll do now is go over the verses. Okay, and they represent different stages of devotion. So first we'll chant them. Okay, we'll chant them together, okay? Any questions so far?
Yes.
I had to give a big introduction, but we're going to cover the verses too. Together. Cheto darpanam arjanam bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam shreyakairaiva chandrika vitaranam vidyavaru jivanam anandam buddhivardhanam pratipadam punamrita svardhanam sarvatma snapadam param te Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. Someone read the first one. Loudly.
Glory to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan, which cleanses the heart of the dust accumulated through years and extinguishes the fire of conditional life, of repeated birth and death. This Sankirtan movement is the prime benediction for humanity at large because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon. It is the life of all transcendental knowledge. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss and it enables us to fully taste the nectar for which we are always anxious.
Nama makari bahuda nija sarva shaktis tatarpita nimitas marane nakala etadrasi tava kripa bhagavan mamapi durdaivam idrisham mihajani nanuraga. Someone read.
O my Lord, your holy name alone can render all benedictions to living beings, and thus you have hundreds and millions of names like Krishna and Govinda. In this transcendental names, you have invested all your transcendental energies. There are not even hard and fast rules for chanting these names. O my Lord, out of kindness, you enable us to easily approach you by your holy names. But I am so unfortunate that I have no attraction for them.
Chanadapi sunichena torori vasihishnana amanina madhanena kirtaniya siddhahari.
Should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false for speech, and should be ready to offer all respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly.
Madanam najanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani jamaneshwari bhavatad bhaktir ahuita ki twayi. Anne-Marie?
Desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your costless devotional service birth after birth.
Okay, we'll stop there, and I got a cramp at the same time. Wow. I'm sitting. Okay, I'm going to go over the verses now, and we'll have a little time for questions and maybe free writing. So, let me just get my notes for a second. So, so the first verse, Rupa Goswami said, as you advance in devotional service, you go through different stages of consciousness and or faith or conviction. You'll get to a stage of conviction that bhakti is so good that you'll do it all the time. You'll come to a stage of conviction that there'll be nothing else in the consciousness but love for God, universal love, which will expand everywhere. So there's different stages. So it first begins with faith. And faith means the preliminary conviction that this is good. So the first verse explains why. And I call the first verse, I call it the Kirtan Sutra. And the reason I call it the Kirtan Sutra is because every spiritual tradition, they have a sutra. There's the Yoga Sutra, there's the Narada Bhakti Sutra, there's the Vedanta Sutra. And what a sutra is something that codifies a vast body of knowledge. It codifies a tradition. And generally they do this, like the Yoga Sutras, for learning the philosophy. It's codified, and then you go to a teacher, and they expand it. And each word has so much meaning. And then when you learn it, then you have the sutra. You just have a few words. But now the words, by studying under a teacher, become impregnated with the meaning. So you can see, even those who have studied the Yoga Sutras, if you studied under a teacher and you reviewed it, and you really studied it, etc., and then you learned all the sutras, you'd have the whole philosophy codified. And then you'd have access to it. But one thing that every sutra does, which is kind of interesting, is they all began with the word atta. And atta means now. And it now is a unit of time, but atta doesn't just mean a unit of time. It means a unit of time now that's the culmination of a particular activity. Like, it's now, right? Now you've done it. So now someone says like that, it's not just this minute, but it's a culmination of all the things you've done wrong. And so they're not talking about just the moment. They're talking about a hierarchical thing. You know, now I'm finished. You know, it's a straw that broke the camel. So now. So it's hierarchical. So in terms of the sutras, every school of thought promotes their particular school. So they're saying now, indicating what? For example, Vedanta Sutra, it says, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now it's time to inquire about God. But what does that now mean? Now means now that it's the culmination of evolution. Now that you've been in every species of life and you've wandered from universe to universe, acting like an animal, just acting according to your impulses, now Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now it's time to inquire about something greater. It's time to inquire about God. So that atta, now, what's the second verse of the Yoga Sutras? What's the first one? Atta Yoga Anushasanam. Now the teachings of yoga. So it's not like now I'm going to explain yoga, but now, after you've studied so many things and did so many things, now control your mind. Now the teachings of controlling your mind. Now that you've done karma yoga and you fulfilled your desires, you went through the social orders, etc., and you've did so many activities and so many things, now yoga. Now control your mind. Now you're ready for meditation. Now you're ready to renounce the world. Now, Atta Yoga Anushasanam. Now the teachings of yoga. So I thought this is the Kirtan Sutra, because at the end, the last verse says, in the first verse, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. So what does it say? Param Vijayate. Param means the supreme. Jayate means glorious. Vijayate means very glorious. This is the most supreme, glorious thing. Sri Krishna Sankirtan. So it says, this is the Bhakti Sutras, but this is within Bhakti, the best thing. Now, you're coming to the very best thing, the most powerful thing. Now, you're coming to what? You're coming to Sri Krishna Sankirtan. And now doesn't just mean kirtan. It says sankirtan. So what does sankirtan mean? Sankirtan means complete kirtan. And what does complete kirtan mean? Complete kirtan means not just kirtan means to glorify. You're not just glorifying. Sham, just shut the door. Okay? You're not just glorifying, but you're doing it with others. You're doing it with many people. Now you should do this. You really want to be absorbed in God? You really want to focus yourself? Then you meet with many people and you chant loudly. and you blissfully sing. And those who chant loudly are not only benefiting themselves, but other living entities. O Lord, those great souls who loudly chant your holy names in paramount bliss should be known as the greatest friends of all living entities. Now do it so others can hear. Do it with others. Complete. When doing japa, you can redeem yourself, but when you chant loudly, you benefit others. Therefore, all the scriptures say that loud kirtan is 100 times more beneficial. Some only feed themselves, others feed thousands of people. You can understand which is the best of the two. So san means complete, and not only complete, but in the right mood. If you want God to manifest completely in his name, don't become an entertainer. I had a disciple, Akinchana Krishna. He's a very beautiful singer. Jamuna Devi, my god sister, very advanced, considered the Bhava Bhakti. So he went to her farm where she's living, and he chanted, and she loved the melody. He brought it from Vrindavan because he was in the 24-hour kirtan, so he brought that melody. She loved it. Then she came to Vrindavan, and he came to see her, and she loved him because she was very great devotee. And she looked at him, and she said, "Don't become an entertainer. You don't chant for yourself, you chant for God." Sankirtan. And I explained, that has such a different effect. When all the Vaishnavas, they used to visit Lord Chaitanya in Puri. They all would come from Puri. And the king was like a devotee, so he went up on the roof with some of Lord Chaitanya's associates. And in Puri, there were thousands of kirtans. If you see what these professional kirtans are like, it would absolutely amaze you. Even the dress, they all got the same colored, yellow kind of charters and things. And then they dance and they jump around the circles together. And the singer, this one singer came to Vrindavan. He's the guru of all the kirtan. Came Kokan Baba. I have a tape of this guy. You hear this guy sing, it blows your mind. Someone complained, he gets paid. Someone said, well, he should be paid. I was like, look at the way this guy sings. But, the chanting out of love, not for money, not for yourself, but actually when you have that in your heart, it's wonderful in the Bhakti Center Thursday night. You have people who do Prem Kirtan. Radha Govinda Mandir, you have people who do Prem Kirtan. It's a whole different experience. Because the name is the same, the melodies may be the same, but the heart is not the same. And kirtan takes your heart out. It's, how compassionate is that? If you have love and you reform it in sound, in a way that your heart, which you've cultivated and you've surrendered to God, and you've practiced, that your heart now is experienced by others just by listening. How beautiful is that? So that's Sankirtan. And what he's saying is, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. This is the best thing to do. It's the most absorbing thing to do. Even when you join with others, if you do it in a proper way with others, it helps you to transcend the limited concept of I, which is I am the center, not that I'm part of something. So when you join with others in love, and you have this, it says, the third verse says, like chanting like a humble, like a blade of grass. And one scholar told me, like you have a lawn, right? You chant like this, each blade contributes to a beautiful effect, but no blade says, look at me. So when you have that type of kirtan, prem kirtan, where people join together, and even there's a great singer and there's a great madanga player, and no one is in the conception that this is about me. This is about the offering we're making. It's like a symphony orchestra. It's about the sound. It doesn't, you know, someone may be so great and he has the violin, he goes off on his own riff and it ruins the symphony. So it's about, and that's what love is. Love is always about there's something greater than myself. If you have a partnership, you want it to be successful, there's something more than you. Family, there's something more than you. Community, cosmic community, relationship with God. It's a principle. We hate people that it's only about them. Yet when we hear that, no, highest is something higher than us, we say, why? We don't like people like that, but we don't mind being that way ourselves. But that's a principle. It's such an obvious principle. This is Sankirtan. The first principle of Kirtan is think of others before yourself. It's so hard. But I know these people that are trained, these young people too, there's some kind of culture there that they kind of understand that. And then what's produced, so when King Pratapruja was looking and all the Vaishnavas were coming from Bengal, he heard thousands of kirtans and they came in. I remember when I first came to the temple in New York, it was on Henry Street in Brooklyn. It was incredible. They had all these great people there. I remember I went to the kirtan there, and the mridangas were in sync. You know, and it's considered very, very sweet. The mridanga is a drum that's very, very sweet. And we heard that drum. It was so sweet. And he said, I've never heard a kirtan like this. Now, what do you mean you never heard? You heard thousands of kirtans. Well, what's the difference? The difference is the heart. So that's Sankirtan. And now he's saying, glory to this. And why? And then he gives seven glories, which will be expanded later. I have a particular time limit, so I'm going to keep it within the time limit. And I don't like to speak too long. So I'm going to finish in a half hour and then have a little time for discussion or something. So we'll go over them. Chaito, Darpana, Marjanam. What happens when you engage with faith, when you believe this, when you do it and you do kirtan, what happens? Chaito, Darpana, Marjanam. That's yoga, chitta, vritti, nirodha. Chaito means the heart. Marjanam means what? You cleanse the heart, which is like a mirror. So the idea is that there's a relationship between perception and contentment. Reality is beautiful, but because our mind is distorted, all our problems are perceptual and not actual. All our problems is how we see things, not the way things are. And we actually cleanse the mind, there's no problem. What's the greatest problem? Death. But what's death? An illusion. The illusion of non-existence. You don't even fear death. And basically speaking, that's our problem. There's one person, a German philosopher, wrote a book called Denial of Death. And everything we do, whether it's to become the president, we want immortality in our name, or in our fame, or our family. We're fighting it. Because the concept of non-existence is the greatest pain. Because pain is when you lose your attachments and the illusion that you will lose them all, including yourself. So Chaito, Darpana, Marjanam, it will cleanse the heart. The heart's like a mirror. It'll be cleansed. You'll see reality. Bhava Maha Devagni Nirvapanam, it will extinguish the fire of material existence. The word is Maha Devagni. Devagni means a forest fire, Devagni. Maha means the great forest fire. So what's the quality of a forest fire? No one knows who starts it, and no one knows how to end it. That's the quality of a forest fire. So the material existence is like a forest fire, and we're all burned by it. To the extent that we have ego, the extent that we're attached to it anyway, we suffer. And it's considered insurmountable. And why is it considered insurmountable? Because every single life we suffer trying to be the enjoyer and controller. We suffer like anything. And right now, all of us are suffering. We may deny it, we're all suffering. And why we're suffering? Because we're not the controllers. And therefore, the world is not conforming to our desires. And that's the faith we have of happiness. It's very, very subtle. We have to satisfy our desires. I mentioned this. It's not Krishna consciousness against enjoyment. It's just not the goal. The goal is to transform your consciousness. The goal is to develop transcendental love. And therefore, we need to be peaceful. Therefore, we need to have our desires. But we suffer because we're not the control. So what's the fire of material existence? It's our own faith that enjoyment is conforming the world to our own desires, rather than the faith that happiness, enjoyment is love and service to God and everything else. And if we actually have that, there is no anxiety, because that's the eternal platform. The extent that we're in anxiety is the extent that we don't have that understanding and consciousness. So it says that the fire of material existence, it's insurmountable, because every single life we come back again. And we come back again and again and go through the same things and the same thing. Even though we suffer so much. And again, when am I going to, I'm saying to myself now, when am I going to give it up? When am I going to surrender to God? When? Why? Why am I doing, I'm saying this with so much conviction now in the class. Why am I doing the things that cause me anxiety again and again and again and again? It's so powerful. What?
I have a question.
Yeah.
Should I wait?
What? No.
So, I'm just wondering.
Yeah.
So if we were giving it up and not going to do it again and again, would that mean we would have no suffering? Right, like meaning, like if we have suffering, does that mean we're definitely coming back?
If we have suffering. Suffering is a symptom of something wrong. Just like in the body, there's Ayurveda. What is disease? It's a crime against nature. So it's a symptom of something. Therefore, there can be pain, but maybe not suffering in the mental sphere.
Right.
Because of how you're reacting to things or understanding things. But I, you know me, I don't like these points to be misunderstood. I don't like to have bhakti misunderstood as renunciation. It's very, very clear that there's nothing, we need enjoyment. It's very clear we need enjoyment. We need to have our desires satisfied, but it's not the goal. Right? It's not the, and if you make it your goal, that's where the suffering is. Because we're not the controller, so it's never going to be perfect. Our goal is the heart. Our goal is the consciousness. And therefore, we take what we need for that. But in terms of material existence, I'm just, maybe it's just me, I'm just reflecting on it. I'm 67, 68, and I'm banging the table. Why don't I give it up? Why you continue? Why you do the same things? Right? And then there's this story. I told this before, and it's very interesting, this story about this guru. And this guru is having a fire yajna. He does it every day, Agni Hotri. And he asks his disciple, can you please get some fire? Which means he has to get a special type of wood that's in the forest. And he knows where the wood is. But it was damp, so he couldn't find. So he came to his guru. He said, look, I can't find any fire. And the guru had a particular nature. And he got real angry, and he said, go to hell. And then the disciple was so sincere, he went down to Yamaraj, the kingdom of Hades. And then he was real happy because he said, everybody's burning. So he went to Yamaraj, the lord of hell, and he said, can I have some fire? And he said, there's no fire here. He said, what do you mean? Look at all the fire there. He said, oh, that? He said, they brought their own fire. So that's what it is. And it's insurmountable. Vishyavini vartante niraharasya dayana raso rajam raso pyasapra. Unless you get param drishvanavartate, unless you get a higher taste, you'll never give up trying to control and enjoy the world, and you'll never give up your frustration. And it's a decision that people have to make to enter on a path to get that. It's not going to happen immediately. It's a process by hearing the right ideas, getting that faith, experiencing things, and in a practical way, moving towards those things. And there are so many challenges. So it says, Bhava Maha. Then it gives the other things. Shreya, Kairava, Chandika, Vitaranam. It said it's like, it's the most auspicious thing because it spreads the rays of the benediction moon. And what it actually says here, the moon shines on a white lotus and a white lotus expands. So it's very auspicious because there's nothing more beautiful than a white lotus. So it's saying what this Param Vijay Sri Krishna Sankirtan, it opens the heart to the best benediction. And what's the best benediction? It's devotion and love. We are consciousness which reaches its fruition in love. What other goal can there be? If you have the whole world, but you have no devotion, you have no love, what other goal can there be? And what can be the highest goal when it fills your heart fully? What can be the goal besides that? And then it goes on, Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam, and it doesn't increases the ocean of and these are the stages of devotion. It increases the ocean of transcendental bliss. Rivers go in an ocean, the ocean doesn't expand. The moon comes, the ocean overflows. So if the ocean is like happiness, happiness is love. And the more that's in your heart, the more you have that. And then it goes, and the stages go higher and higher. Pratipadam purnamrita. At every step, you're experiencing purnamrita svardhanam. You're tasting full nectar, full pleasure. At every step, sarvatmastan. Then you're bathed in it. These are all stages. So this is the first stage. Faith that comes by association, by sadhu sangha. Now what happens is very interesting. We're going to go through the verses. Now what you do is after this, you hear it, you go like, oh my God, I'm not a devotee. Oh my God. This is it, man? I might as well give up. Glorious to this. I have no devotion. And then the glories, he increases the glories. So here what it says is, it says that what happens after hearing this, lamentation and humility awoke within Chaitanya. Lamentation, why lamentation, humility? Oh man, I'm not a devotee. Oh my God, I'll never get this. This is just too much. I've been chanting for 10 years and I feel nothing. They one time, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was Prabhupada's guru. And two monks were there, and they raised their hands. They said, I've been chanting for 10 years, and I feel nothing. And then he said, good, and he walked out. And they said, well, why did he say good? So one said, I think I know why he said good. Because without humility, you can never feel love. You'll never feel anything. The nature of humility makes one humble. Here's an example. We know sometimes there's big mafia people, but when they visit their mother, they're not the controllers and enjoyers. And they're happy, right? They're sitting at the table. I used to visit this family in Delhi. I used to visit this family in Delhi, and there were four floors, and different brothers lived on one floor, and the mother lived on one floor. And she was a simple lady, and she had a little cloth on her shoulder, and she had arthritis, and she'd walk around dusting everything. And they were very big businessmen. But they would never go out of the house for asking her permission. And I would stay with them for weeks at a particular time. I wouldn't go out of the house without asking her. And you know how much pleasure that is to go to the old lady, and she would give me a hug? And I'll tell you another story. This is an interesting story. And I have I have time in my head, so I'm going to finish everything. But this is another example. One time, I went to see this old sadhu in Vrindavan. And his temple overlooked a place called Sevakunj, where Krishna had the Rasa Leela. And it's filled with monkeys now. Mm. And he heard that in the West, this person, he's like a very advanced sadhu, but when you go in, it'd almost be like a cartoon where someone would be like shooting guns and like, because he'd like be so heavy, he'd blast everybody. So I knew when I come in, he was going to say something like, but I went to see him anyway. He invited me for prasadam or something, and I went to see him, one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, and he was like, really? And he looked at me and my friend, and he said, so you want to understand Raganuga Bhakti? That's higher devotion. So he understood I was interested in this. He heard about it. You want to understand Raganuga Bhakti? He said, in the West, he said, you don't even understand the love of a mother for a child. And he heard about abortion and late thing abortion, so he was very upset about this. He said, you don't even understand the love of a mother for a child. And you want to understand the love of Mother Yasoda for Krishna? And you want to understand Raganuga Bhakti, and you don't even understand that love? And then he said, I knew one man in Calcutta. And that man in Calcutta, he was 75 years old. He had 10 sons. He had hundreds of grandchildren. He had thousands of people working for him. And then he broke down, he said, but he would only take food from the hand of his 95-year-old mother. He said, then without understanding that love, how will you understand the love of Mother Yasoda for Krishna? So there it is, such a big person. But you want love? You want the flavor of mercy that comes from the mother? You drop your ego at the door. And when these people in Delhi, that lady, she was so simple. But because of their respect for her, she was like the greatest to them. It was like idolized by them. So Lord Chaitanya is hearing about this love. And then he says, Nam Nam Ukari Bahuda. How merciful is Krishna? He's coming in his name, but he has unlimited names. According to your mood in relationship to God, God has a form and a name for you. Because Swapriyanam, the greatest name to chant, is the name of your beloved Lord. See, Anne-Marie, now it's Radha Krishna, right? So, Radha Krishna Pranamora, you. So, it's special now, the name of your beloved Lord. So, Nam Nam Akaru Bahuda, God appears according to our love. He'll appear as a child. And then your favorite name will be Yaso Mati Nandana Braja Bara Nagara Goku. So he has so many names. He's so accessible. He's so great. But he's so accessible, Nijasarva Shaktis, and he has all potency. Those names are not different from him. And Tatarpita Niyamatasmaranena Kala. And there are not even hard and fast rules. He's not even making you do swahats, do this, prayers, nothing. He's just giving these names. They're not different from him. He's so merciful. And then Lord Chaitanya is going, oh my God. Not only is so glorious, he's so high, but he's merciful. He's making himself accessible fully in his name, which is non-different from him. There's one famous story with Lord Chaitanya and a little Lord Chaitanya, you know, in India, the highest form of sanitation is not to build a toilet in your house with a sewer system, it's to go out in the fields. Because then the sun naturally comes down and purifies everything. And then what you do becomes basically fertilizer, rather than polluting the Hudson River or whatever. So Lord Chaitanya went out to the fields, and he was holding his tongue, because the name is none different than God. So Lord Chaitanya, you see, it's described, and when one perfects his mantra, this is a fact. It's there in classical yoga, not even bhakti yoga. If you perfect the mantra goes on in the heart automatically. And I know this from two saints. One was Prabhupada's godbrother, Akinchana Krishnadas Babaji, who Prabhupada said was a Paramahamsa. He chanted 24 hours a day. I heard he was in the hospital. I went to the hospital. He had already left to prepare to leave his body in Nandagram. The doctor told me, when I held the stethoscope to his heart, I was hearing the holy name. And then I had another sadhu. He was so humble, he would come to my festival in Puri. Bryn heard him sing. Powerful voice. He had 6 heart attacks. He was unconscious. While he was unconscious, he was still chanting. So it actually is a fact that you can embed the mantra in your heart that it goes on automatically at an advanced platform. So what happened is, he was holding his tongue, Lord Chaitanya. And he went out to the fields. And the little boy said, why are you holding your tongue? He said, because it's non-different than Krishna, and I'm going out to the fields. The boy said, if you die, you're going to chant the holy name or hold your tongue. Lord Chaitanya said, good point. And then Lord Chaitanya said, you are Guru. And he became known as Gopal Guru. He became one of the big acharyas in our line, Gopal Guru. So there's no hard and fast rules. If you want to really perform Jnana Yoga, or it's matched in the Bhagavad Gita, if you want to perfect yoga to perfectional state, you have to sit on an asana, you can't move, the complete celibacy has to be there, complete silence has to be there, you have to be in a secluded place, there's some holy name. In the bathroom you can chant. There's no restrictions. So now Lord Chaitanya is hearing this. Oh my God. I have no attraction. Atadrasi tava kripa bhagavan mamapi. And then it says, but tava kripa bhagavan mamapi, but you're kind. And still you're appearing. You're kind and you're still giving the name despite our lack of qualification. And then Lord Chaitanya says, Dur Daivam Idrisham Ihajani Nanura, not, but I, Dur Daivam, bad karma, so I have no attraction for them. That's the next stage. See, what happens is, in bhakti, your bad qualities can become your good qualities. Because if you become humble, you feel love more. I'll give you a classic example. Take a child that is spoiled. Grunepoint is a very good mother. She gives the children care, but there are parameters. She's tough. So the child grows up very appreciative. They don't have to be spoiled. The mother doesn't have to take me to Toys R Us. Oh, you wouldn't go to Toys R Us anyway. I want this. I want that. I want that. No. If Krunapurna gives her a hug, she feels love. If she says a little something nice, she feels love. But when you're spoiled and you feel entitled, no matter what you get, you can't feel love. So Lord Chaitanya is again saying, this is our humility. You use your bad qualities for your good qualities. And if you're chanting and you have no taste, then add that yearning to your chanting, and that will give you taste. In one book, the Bhakti Sandarbha, it's such a great quote by Lord Chaitanya, he said, devotion in the form of kirtan is unlimitedly merciful to those devoid of false prestige. So this is actually our practice. We're not going to be perfect. Admit it. It gives you even more reason to depend on God and to call from Him from the core of your heart. And if that doesn't work, then just live and work in New York City.
Just what?
Live and work in New York City. What? If you have any sense, right, that you're not dependent and that you're independent and that you can control, then live and work in New York City. And then use that. Chant deeply, there'll be feeling. There'll be feeling. There's one verse by a great Queen Kunti's prayers. She says, Janmai Shvaya Shruta Shribir Edamanam Adapunam Navahat Yabita. He said, if one becomes intoxicated by Janma, aristocratic birth, Janmaishvara, opulence, Shruta, my education or learning, Shribir, my beautiful partners, my trophies. If you become intoxicated by those things, you can't chant with feeling. Therefore, Prabhupada said one of the main instructions, we should chant like a child who is crying for his mother. Why? Because that's who we are. Why object? What's the objection? I'm not God. There's a body and there's a hand, and you're the hand. And be happy about it. And serve the body. Why say, I want to be the... No, I want to be the body. Serve the body. When you serve the body, what happens? You have meaning, and you become nourished. So this is the mood. We're part of something greater than ourselves, but we have unlimited capacity for love. And that capacity of love is so great that God has to take our position to become complete. Because we have an advantage. Would you like to be in the center all the time? Yeah, maybe. Everyone go, jai, 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 jai. You're playing your flute, threefold bending form. See, God is the supreme enjoyer of love, but to do that, he has to love. He has to love too. He wants our position. And our position just happens not to be independent. It happens not to be the controller. It happens not to be God. Get over it. Embrace it. And call for that connection that makes us complete. The hand becomes complete attached to the body. We become complete as our part. Like if you take a small part of a very expensive computer and you take it to like a village in India where electricity hasn't come for, how much is that worth? Not worth anything. Has no value. But you bring it to the city and where there's a computer and it's the part someone's missing, it can be very valuable. So the part has meaning in relationship to service to the whole. So we have meaning in relationship to service to the whole. And what chanting is the expression of that need. And that's our love. Our flavor of love, the mother's flavor of love is, I am the maintainer. The child's flavor of love is, you are the maintainer. That flavor of love. So he says, Durdaivam. What does Durdaivam mean? Misfortune. What is the greatest misfortune? We commit offenses. Not just we make have do things that are unwanted, we commit offenses. Sadhu ninda, we criticize others. We criticize the worst thing. We offend the name. There's offenses to the name. Now, what happens is, then Lord Chaitanya began to, as he spoke in this way, his humility increased. And what happens when your humility increases? Your love increases. Your love increases because your heart, humility, just think of it. They said ego, your pride. Pride is not where love is. Humility is where love is. The more the humility increases, then the more the feeling of love, and the more the love increases, you become humble. So Lord Chaitanya, he says his humility increased and began praying to Krishna that he could discharge pure devotional service. Wherever there is a relationship of love of God, its natural symptom is that the devotee does not think himself a devotee. Instead, he always thinks that he has not even a drop of love for God. And why? Because also, what is love? Love is I want. And the more you have love, the more you want. I want. I want. And what is want? You feel I'm lacking something. Hunger means humility. I have no food. Love means humility. The more you love, it's like a hunger. I have none. And the more you feel I have none, the more you want it. And the more you want it, the more your love increases. And the more you chant in that mood, the more God feels your love and reciprocates by giving himself. You all have hearts. Who do you give your heart to? Anyone? Because if someone has your heart, they can do to you two things better than anyone else. They can serve you, or they can exploit you. So who does God give his heart to? To one who loves him. So the more, this is the path of bhakti. The more there's that love, the more there's devotion, the more God gives himself. And the more God gives himself, the humbler you become. Why? Because your relative insight, well, I'm in front of the Himalayas, I'm humble. This is like, wow, I'm nothing, and I love it. I felt like I put my head down. I'm happy small. So this is what happens. So Lord Chaitanya's greater humility, and then he says something, and this is so significant. He says, here symptoms of how one should chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra to wake very easily awaken one's dormant love for Krishna. And then, so this is so significant. You want love of Krishna? He says, now this is how you're going to get it. When you have this type of humility. And then he chants the famous verse. I'll say it in English. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself more tolerant than the tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one could chant always. In that kind of feeling of humility. And actually, this verse is so important. There was an associate of Lord Chaitanya. His name was called Raghunath Das Goswami. And he was the son of the richest man in the country. But he had this bhakti that he wanted. And he got touched by bhakti. And because he got touched by bhakti, that was higher than all the money. Then his parents said, well, what should we do to keep him here? So they married him to a wife more beautiful than the goddess of fortune. He had more money than Indra. But he was a very advanced soul. Not everybody can do this, but he was evolved. And he had that love. And he just wanted to be with Lord Chaitanya. He just wanted to be with Lord Chaitanya. And he said, Daddy, Mommy, if you want to make me happy, why won't you let me go? To make a long story short, it's a whole story. He finally went, and he's living as a renunciate, and Lord Chaitanya put him under his most confidential associate. And he says to his most, he's under Srupa Dhamma, he says, I want to ask a question to Lord Chaitanya. And he goes to Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya said, look, I put you under my confidential associate. He's more advanced than me. Why are you coming? Lord Chaitanya is humble. He's more advanced than me. So you just ask him. But he said, but if you want to understand, he said, I want to understand what is the sadhana and what is the sadhya. This is the most important question. What is the goal and what is the practice? So, Bryn, you're wearing the, oh, you're not wearing the, that's not the charter of the divine order of renunciates. That's the other charter that was given to protect you. So Bryn went to me with one holy place and someone gave her a gift. And she didn't realize that the gift, in this place you have to cover your head. We went there where you saw the cow. So you have to cover your head. So Bryn went in. Of course, she's very tall compared to the Indian ladies. The ladies are in front. And she's covering her head, and someone gave her this gift. And it happened to be the scarf of the divine order of the renunciates. So she's wearing it on her head with all these sadhus. And they're kind of like really nice. They're not like weird type. They're nice, but like they kind of, and there's a lot of men. So they looked at this scarf. And they said, I said, what happened? You can't wear that. So I threw my charter at her. And that became her charter. And I couldn't wear her remnant, so I didn't get the charter back. So I just... You know, this is the first time I'm doing it in four classes, and I realize my introduction was too long, and I just thought should have started with the verses. But it is in two classes, so I have about six more verses, but I do know how to sum them all up. But let me just finish quickly what happens here, and it's very, very beautiful. So this humility, lower than the straw in the street. And he's thinking now, Lord Chaitanya is thinking, straw has utility. Straw, you can build straw bale houses, you can make, you know, furniture, you can light fire. I'm lower than that. I have no, and more tolerant than a tree. That he said that one should chant in this way, in utter humility. And why can you chant always when you chant in utter humility? Because what is the one thing you can do always? There's only one thing you can do without stop. And that's love. And the reason why love is causeless means you don't, there's no reason to do love for yourself. So it has no cause. And something that has no cause can't be stopped. And it's also the highest pleasure. So if you actually have love, you're actually feeling love, and the highest love is love for God, then there's no stop to it. Where in Jnana, you take the path of Jnana Yoga, the goal is moksha. The path is austerities. So the path is not the pleasure, the goal is the pleasure. And if you do Karma Yoga, you want to get, you know, opulence and different things, so you perform the yugas are boring. But the goal is what there is. But there can be no goal in love. If you say, I am loving because I want this, it's not love. So when you actually feel love, it's the one thing where you can stay in eternally. So what this verse says, and it's a very interesting verse, it says in this state of mind, you can chant always. Why? Why are you humble? Because you look at it like this. When you're love from above is called mercy. You never experience mercy if you're proud. If you're entitled, like the spoiled child, nothing the child gets do they feel love. When the child is trained properly and a good family, like Kaylee, then they're appreciative. They're not spoiled. So they can feel love. She can feel love from her mother. Because she doesn't feel her mother has to give her, a new car. The mother has to give her this. The mother has to give her this. No. So she's trained properly. So her father and mother, father may say something nice. Her mother may pat her on the head. And she feels love. So when you're humble, you feel love. And when you feel love from, you can feel love for. So he's saying, when you feel God's love because you are humble, because you embrace this humble state of mind, thinking oneself low, and it's not artificial, and more devoid of all sense of ready to offer all respects to others, then you'll have love, and then you can chant. In love, you can chant. So this is actually the practice, four things: humility, tolerance, respect, and constant chanting. That is the path of bhakti. And you say, well, I am not humble. Then I already said, if you act humble, you're more likely to be humble. And we can act humble. That's the whole thing, having a teacher, having a spiritual authority. That's what humility means. That recognition and acceptance that there's a truth higher than what I want. What I want may be the truth, but not because I want it, because it conforms to the truth. And I want to live, and there is an absolute truth. And I'll live by that absolute truth. So if you act humble, you can become humble. But if you just think humble but do not act, you won't be humble. So it's a process. And, when you actually chant and you hear the holy name, and what happens, maybe you'll feel some feeling and you'll feel it's mercy. What does mercy mean? Mercy means that you have need for something that you can't pay. So anytime you feel mercy, you'll feel humble. Let's say, you're walking down the street and then there's someone that comes to you and said, I heard you do a lot of good work, and here I'd like to give you $500,000. What will you feel? You have to feel humble. You don't feel, yeah, thanks. About time someone gave it. But let's say it was really kind for her. It's just like there was this ethnic joke. I don't want to say which ethnicity, but it was in South America between two South Americans. So one was commenting about this other. It was Kishore, and he was commenting about some other South Americans, and they were joking. So he said to that South American, he said, well, how does someone from your country commit suicide? The guy says, how? He said, you jump off your ego. Then he said, there's two people from your country on a mountain, right? And the other country, they're known for their like macho and bravado. There's two people in your country on a mountain, right? And then there's two people and lightning comes, and then one turns to another and says, It's about time God took a snap of me. But when there's kindness means undeserved mercy, then you feel your humility. But not your lack of self-esteem, because you're feeling love, even though you don't feel you have so much significance. Now, then what happens in this verse, the next thing that happens, then Lord Chaitanya then feels, I can't even serve Krishna. He feels, I can't even serve Krishna. I'm not even a devotee. And then he says, Nadanam, Najanam, I don't want anything else. I only want devotion. Feeling I don't have it. Now, what I'm going to do now is I'm just going to read one essay on humility. And on the 29th, we'll have another class. Now that I've given one of the classes, I have more of an idea how to balance it. So I'm going to read something on humility and listen very, very carefully. Okay? When St. Augustine, the inimitable Catholic theologian, was asked to name the most important practices to achieve love of God, he thought for a while, answered that there are three and named them. Humility, humility, humility. I loved Augustine's answer, but had a lingering doubt. What exactly is humility? The dictionary defines humility as having a modest or low opinion of one's self-importance, but I was not satisfied. A good definition must be precise. It cannot be too inclusive and thus encompass things that it should not. One has low self-esteem, and one who is codependent also have a low opinion of their self-importance. But how can a psychological aberration be included in humility? But if they do not constitute humility, then what is the difference between humility and these two conditions? I came up with a simple definition of humility that I think is more precise and thus excludes psychological aberrations such as low self-esteem and codependence. I define humility as happy small. In other words, a humble person has a modest opinion of him or her or herself, but is not disturbed, while someone with low esteem is miserable about their self-conception. Many psychological reasons may explain why a person with low self-esteem has such a negative outlook, but the ultimate difference between a person who lacks self-esteem and a humble person is that the one with low self-esteem is negative about their lack of self-importance, and a humble person is not. A person with low self-esteem is seeking self-importance and thus feels disturbed and unworthy in regard to their perceived lack of importance, where one who is truly humble embraces their humble position out of a desire to serve others. Therefore, unlike a person with low self-esteem, a humble person sees no dichotomy between their self-ideal and their current position. There is no psychological aberration in their modest feelings. Keep in mind that this is not an either-or proposition. One can at different times have feelings of both humility and low self-esteem, but one should do one's best to make a distinction between them. What about a person who is codependent? Are they not happy to serve their beloved? Isn't that happy small? Yes, one may feel a certain pleasure in submitting to someone they accept as greater, but in contrast to one with true humility, they do not feel small or humble. Rather, because the person's identity is linked to someone, their prestige is enhanced, and their submission or so-called humility is connected to the ego, the desire to have distinction. As these concepts are subtle, and I have long searched for an example to illustrate them, I thought of a good one. Happy small is like the mood of a young child in the arms of his or her mother. As the child loves the mother and the mother is a worthy shelter, the child feeling subordinate is a positive experience. Again, there is no dichotomy between the child's self-ideal and his or her actual position of dependence, because it is natural for a small child to seek the shelter of a loving mother. Also, because that subordination facilitates feeling love, the child feels worthy in this dependence. A child's feeling of happy small is thus analogous to a soul's humble relationship to God, and more generally to all genuine loving relationships. As stated in Augustine's Christian tradition, unless one becomes like a child, one cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. I can see this is a deep topic far beyond the scope of this week's column. I've tried to make these distinctions because in this world of proliferating abuse and low self-esteem, people tend to suspect humility, fearing weakness and exploitation, when in fact humility is a sign of strength. Only a humble person can resist the impulse of the ego. Humility is a virtue. Let us all pray to feel happy small and honor the dignity of our humble souls. Okay, are there any questions? Does anyone have any? Yeah, Ganesham.
You were mentioning the second verse.
Yeah.
You can use lamentation.
Yeah.
And I'm just also remembering Rupa Goswami says that lamentation could be an obstacle to bhakti.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what is that lamentation that we can use that can actually benefit our bhakti? What do you refer to? What can also get in the way of our...
You know, it's so nice. You know, I wrote all these Monday morning greetings, and I wrote one on this. Does a fallen soul have to feel guilty? So there's actually a difference. You know, when you're humble, you can feel that you're fallen, you're not up to the goal. You can lament you're not up to the goal, but you don't feel depressed because you're moving towards the goal. So there's a certain lamentation in that way. And you know, these are words that, you know, in bhakti, you know, the value of something, an object, is not what it is, but how it's used. So even these feelings, even the gopis, is expressed, they have a certain kind of depression. What is their depression? They're separated from Krishna. Krishna is their life. Without Krishna, I have no life. They see the world as zero because they love Krishna, and Krishna is everything. Without Krishna, nothing has meaning. But behind that is their love. So actually, there is great meaning. It's that feeling of devotion that wells within their hearts. So in the same sense, when Lord Chaitanya, it says, now he lamented. And we can also lament, well, I'm not, you know, I'm not a devotee. I'm not a devotee. But if your desire is to be one, that becomes your devotion. And somehow under that lamentation, your heart then is nourished. Any other questions? Champak?
I'm thinking about humility and how I am being humbled by people and circumstances every day because things are not happening according to my desires.
Yeah.
And I'm always trying to fix it so that I'm kind of peaceful and satisfied. And you mentioned that we do need to feel peaceful and to make progress spiritually. But then I'm kind of having trouble finding that balance, not to fixate on trying to fix things so that I'm peaceful and my mind is calm and I can just, you know, and fixating on that too much.
Yeah.
And instead of just trying to be humble and work internally on, you know, chanting and things that are...
Yeah, a humble person can be bold. A humble person can be confident. A humble person can realize that they have abilities. Satyaraj is a wonderful writer. He produces a lot of books. He's not going to say, I'm not a good writer. But the difference is, when person is humble, they realize that that ability comes from God. And perhaps if someone else had that ability, they would do it better than me. So, you know, at the root, you know, and the other thing is about, we also need some esteem, right? So self-esteem, it's not the goal, right? So we do need self-esteem. It's not that we should just feel always crushed and weak and beaten, and that's good for our bhakti too. We do need a little, you know, and therefore, I remember one time there was a young boy and they complained to Prabhupada, this boy's proud of his Sanskrit. Prabhupada said he should be proud. So everything can be used in devotional service. And it's not that we don't try for a better life, but we should make sure that that better life, so-called, conforming the world to our desires, because we need this and we need that and we need this to be peaceful. We just have to make sure that's not our goal. Because the only thing that's going to actually satisfy is not things, but our consciousness. We've got to change our consciousness. Now, if we need for that to get married, if we need to, you know, and different people have different needs, even, you know, they have different needs according to their birth. Different people have different needs. It's not everybody even has the same needs, even material. Some person may be born with a silver spoon in their mouth. And to be peaceful, they need a little bit more than someone was born in this. All those things are keeping into account. The thing is, what is our goal? And our goal is the transformation of consciousness. Our goal is love and devotion. And we do what's needed practically for that. And there's always a tension in this world. I read something I just want to share with you that's interesting. There's order. Order is where things can go according to your will. And there's chaos where things don't go according to your will. Now, you need order. But if there's just order in your life, there's no growth. We also need chaos. We also need to step out on the limb. Right, Sylvia, you were working here in Manhattan, and right? And then you wanted to pursue some dream, right? You had order, you had your apartment, you had your job, you had your money, right? But was the growth meant that you had to do your dream and get the self-sustainable farm and go to Costa Rica and get bitten by the bug, some story there. But whatever the case is, things can't be chaos, because then there's no peace. And it can't be order, because there's no growth. So life does have a tension, and that tension is healthy. And in terms of your saying, yes, the humility is, you know, I give a whole class on humility. I can think of people who are very strong and powerful or humble. We had a good friend, Satyaraj, and myself, Kastubha's guru, you know Kastubha. His name Tamal Krishnamaraj. He was such a powerful person, and his nature was to control things. I mean, really powerfully. But when I looked at him, I think he was humble. Because he accepted that there was a truth and authority beyond his own. And that was Prabhupada. And therefore, ultimately, his mood was service. And he used that in Krishna's service. And actually, if you know him, he wasn't proud. He just had a tendency and a nature. And he used it. Okay, Champak? Go get the donuts. Bring them now. We'll have a little prasad. I have to give you prasad first, Sylvia. Can you wait 1 second? Okay. And we'll meet on Tuesday. What? Okay, Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Okay? Okay. Thank you. It's so nice that you came. I really appreciate it.